This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to the Essential Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the Essentials, the Reset, and I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, as usual. We're going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation, I think. We're going to even have an extra special, more wonderful conversation than we did in recent times because I have back in the studios today one of my most favorite persons in all the world. We have with us Dr. April Ripley, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia, United States. She is an international speaker. She's a leadership expert. She's an individual who understands diplomacy and protocol, and she is also a mentee of our beloved Myers, Dr. Myers Munroe. And so she's in studio with us this evening. We're going to talk about a topic which I think is very, very important in our lives, very, very important today when we look across the globe and we see the developments happening in Africa, when we see what's happening in the United States, indictment of a president, when we look at the development in the Caribbean and challenges that we see in our sister country, Haiti, for example. There is such a myriad of issues which scream out for leadership. And she has the knowledge, she has the expertise, she has the exposure to discuss these with us. And so we are going to hear from her. And as usual, if you wish to join us this evening, of course, just to ensure that your contribution is nice and pithy, short and nice, well-construed, and focus on the topic that we are discussing. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or you can contact us via our text line, 422-4796. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. We're going to take ourselves a very, very quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get right into it with our guest, Dr. April Ripley. Stay tuned. Don't move. Come right back.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Always on the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
have sorrow.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. The singer says, lean on me. And we have our guest in the studio is an individual who is dependable. And you can lean on her. If you want to explore leadership, if you want to explore what's happening in the world, if you want to understand how it all connects and the impact that leadership can have on making our world a better place, then without doubt, my words, and I challenge you to challenge me, that Dr. April Ripley is your go-to individual. Welcome back to The Essentials.
Well, I am so excited to be here, Hubert. Thank you for the invitation. As always,
yes.
It is a great joy to be here on The Essentials because that means that what we talk about is what's needed, essential, right?
Yes, Essentials.
So just to start off, though, I want to congratulate you 7 years of The Essentials and certainly to wish the Bahamas a very happy 50th independence celebration. As you know, we just got finished celebrating in Atlanta on this past weekend, so it was a great joy to be at as part of the celebrations because I think I'm got a little bit of Bahamian somewhere, I don't know. But anyway, it's always a pleasure to be in the place, as we know Dr. Monroe often said, where God lives.
Yes.
So thank you for having me back.
It's always a pleasure. And you know that when you pass through, the obligatory stop must be at The Essentials. Because we like having the conversations with you. And the conversations that we have are designed to be edifying and uplifting, and of course, deal with important issues. And so before we get into that, just to get a little bit of a background, you know, just introduce, or I would say reintroduce yourself to the audience.
Certainly. So I am called the Ambassador of Civility. So a lot of the work that I do is to connect persons from around the world to various resources, access information, opportunity, and then sometimes also to establish certain deals, but, you know, deals not just from a financial perspective in the business transaction, but also to really better communities, provide access and opportunity for basic needs, buildings and logistics and things like that. So quite a lot of work. And I'm just really privileged to do that. Certainly privileged in my life to have had some wonderful mentors, Dr. Monroe. Obviously, here we're in the Bahamas, but, you know, his work has been, you know, transformative in mindset first, because, you know, he often said he's transforming followers into leaders and leaders into agents of change. And you and I both know that that starts in the mindset,
yes.
Right? It starts with the core belief system and other great mentors. Another mutual we have, Dr. Richard DeMarin, who's also here in Bahamas. Dr. Sintrim, a lot of persons, even people that I've read that are also in the diplomatic space and have served for many years. Dr. Martin Luther King, how could I not talk about Atlanta, not talk about Dr. King? And when you shared earlier, I was thinking about something that he said, and he says that we're all tied in this inescapable network of mutuality, that what affects one affects us all. And so if we look at the world, not just, well, this is my country and this is what we do, but also how globalization has affected us all. We are, you know, I consider myself somewhat of a global citizen. I know the place of where I was born and maybe the race and ethnicity, but I don't allow that to limit, you know, my exposure to the world and what I can do to help others across the world.
Yeah. And as you look across the global landscape, you look across, as I mentioned in the beginning, we look at the development in Africa, the coup in Niger. We look at what is happening in the United States at the moment with the indictment of the former president. But of course, it goes back to this idea of the transition, peaceful transition of leadership. What comes to mind from a leadership perspective? What exactly is missing? What is it? Because when we have crises, when we have upheavals, the circumstance is crying out for an intervention. What exactly is missing?
So interesting that you talk about this indictment being from the state of Georgia, which is one of the places where he has been for interference with the 2020 election. You know, Hubert, again, you know, when you talk about a leader, so leadership, let's talk about that, right? You have the person, the leader, you have the position of leadership. And whomever that person is, whatever their belief is, whatever their moral compass is, that's who takes that position. So if you believe that you are above the rule of law, or certain things don't affect you because you have access to certain wealth or privilege, mm-hmm. then you conduct everything in your life, your behavior follows that belief, because we all live out our ideologies. So I think that that really shows where people think that they are above certain things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people would say, well, you know, people make mistakes, and we all have, or you know, made decisions that weren't in the best interest for ourselves or others. And that's true, and that's part of the human experience. But I think the thing is to learn from that, right? We should learn from that. We should seek then to correct it if it's possible, to mitigate the outcome, again, if that's possible. But I think that also is a testament to leadership. And that's one of the things that we've been talking about. You know, I'm here in the Bahamas for a conference at Bahamas Faith Ministries, and it's talking about how to transform nations. But starting first with personal, of course, going into family, going into societal developments. And I really rounded off, Hubert, into the five capital models, which the Forum of the Future talks about. And, you know, we have the natural capital, the resources, what you're talking about, what's happening in Africa right now, mm-hmm. that there comes a time when the human spirit recognizes that I'm being oppressed.
Yeah.
And I'm being shortchanged on what my value is, what my worth is as a person, and even in natural resources, which is what is happening. To say that, if this is worth so much, why are you paying me so little? Mm-hmm. And then I think also that people are saying that the leadership that are in place that have made these deals need to be held responsible for the deals that they've made. And these deals should help to benefit the communities, have responsibility to, you know, have connection. I think one of the latest was saying that they mine, and this is, you know, France and Niger right now, that they supply about 90% of what's needed for France to have, you know, the benefits that they have with connectivity and technology, but yet they don't have it in their own country.
Exactly.
And something is wrong with that. There should be something that goes off in the human spirit that says this is morally wrong.
It's about equity, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So again, right, it's where the morality lies, mm-hmm. in the leadership. And to want to see the people, because here's the thing, Hubert, when people do well, you don't have as much issue, right? You're also a legal scholar. You know, crime results from the lack of, or the perception of the lack of, mm-hmm. having access to resources. Even in the United States, George Floyd was quite, you know, the thing that went around the world. Even with COVID, people didn't care. They were in the streets, right? But even before that, looking at what happened to Michael Brown's community, mm-hmm. There weren't access to opportunities, certain stores. There was a pawn shop or a liquor store there, no bank there. Nothing that would create an environment to give access and opportunity for an individual to thrive. So I'm not here to say that that's an excuse for certain behaviors, but what I'm saying is that we need to look at that and say, why are certain things in areas where money and funding goes, mm-hmm. but in certain neighborhoods there's train tracks running through them, or they're next to landfills or environmentally? I have a colleague that works with the environmental agency in the U.S., and he brought out the fact, let's look at communities of color where they're situated. And you can go back to these old maps, you know, red line districts and things, and this isn't just to America, but even in other nations. Why is that so? And these are things that can trigger, that can be, you know, it's like I starve a dog and then let him loose and wonder why he bites. Mm-hmm. Well, I starved him. He wants food. He's desperate for food. And so I think as leaders, it is incumbent upon us to look at other decisions or look at the whole of things. And that really goes to critical thinking, Huber, because a lot of things are flooding my mind right now, because often we want the easy way, right? Give me A or B, I choose one and let's keep moving. But critical thinking is not just an easy A or B answer. You have to go through a track of looking at stakeholders involved, the inputs that you're putting into the organizational implementation. Is it even possible to happen? I gave an example recently in a talk that I did. Someone said, well, I communicate to this person and they don't respond back. I said, okay, well, let's look at this. Let's take a moment to say that. What is it that you communicate? How are you communicating it? And when? And maybe even the fact of the context of what you're communicating. So those are four different avenues that are more than just A, B, and C, right? Or D. It takes the person to really think through it. So as leaders, we can't just be so fixed as to what would be an immediate gratification. We have to look at the longer term, the legacy of, is this investment, will that then bring schools, bring access to opportunity for the community? Like the African proverb says, that I plant trees today that I may not rest under their shade, but I'm looking for the future.
Yes.
And that's what leaders now are really sensing, the tension of that. Mm-hmm. I believe social media, or I should say the World Wide Web, has enabled us to not be so ignorant of things. We have to sift through some of the mis and disinformation, but now there's this charge to say, hey, is that true what you're telling me?
Yeah. Where exactly are we? There's a democratization of information, the availability of information. Mm. It gives persons in far-flung places the opportunity to compare and contrast exactly what is happening. So, back in the day, for example, let's go back to Niger. The individuals who were working in the mine did not necessarily have the same level of consciousness as they do today as to the state of affairs in France. Today, they can, on the flip of a phone, look and say, well, I don't see any lines running above my house, but look at the city lights in Paris.
Right.
And we are then recognizing that the resources that enable that is coming from here, and look at our state. And in a way, that is a microcosm of some of the challenges that individual countries face within themselves. Because at the end of the day, Dr. Ripley, it's really about persons asking leadership to lead, to manage, to marshal resources, which is going to be in the best interest for the greater good, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it is holding those leaders accountable.
Yeah.
And leaders to be integrous in their dealings, to be transparent. One of the things that we try to do in working with public policy creation is to bring more than just a particular group to the table. Mm. One of the groups that I work with, that I partner with, have something called In Loco, and they're located in the nation of Lesotho. And what I love about Daniela's motto is that if the community has a need for something, they bring them to the table. Mm-hmm. And they provide forums to say, what is that you want? What are your needs for the community? Because also, as leaders, we can't assume that we know that. Mm. That's kind of an older style of leadership. We look at the times, as you say, that we're in. And, the 50s and 60s were kind of that martial area of do this. Okay, I go and do it. But now that we have access to information, there is more opportunity. There's also, more choices for us to make. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what's important. These great summits that we have and heads of state go and the Davoses of the world. Is there ever a poor mother that's there that can barely make ends meet, who's taking care of her family, her husband deceased, or, having to go to another country to work just to provide food for the table? Are those persons at the table? And I think the new leadership model is engagement. It's bringing persons to the table to allow them to voice their opinions, what they see as their needs. And then sitting down to say, okay, how can we work through this jointly? This becomes a joint effort of government working with its people, and not just for. Government should work for, Hubert. Let's temper that a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. We elect leaders to work for us, mm-hmm. right? I voted you in, you're working for me. But this concept of working with, I think it changes the narrative, right? Which means that you represent me in places that maybe I can't walk into the parliament. But then I also feel that you're in my community, sitting with me, talking with me, so that when you go into parliament, you're speaking on behalf of me.
There's a partnership.
Yeah, there's a partnership. Absolutely, there's a partnership. And I believe that's where the dissatisfaction and disgruntlement is that we see really globally. Mm-hmm. Globally.
Yeah, I believe that the scenarios you just outlined is what's really creating the tension. So as we transition from era where persons would sit back and allow the leadership to kind of dictate what needs to be done, to a state today where persons are now asking for a place at the table or asking for avenues for input, it's creating that type of a tension where leadership now maybe is a little bit perplexed as to how do they balance this, because it's no longer you running in an exclusive club. You leading in a way which excludes me. You thinking about the circumstance about from the point of view of your best interest. We're asking you to marshal resources, to grow and develop, to create an environment in which I can flourish, and you are my representative to facilitate that.
Absolutely.
Isn't that this transition that we've seen?
That's what we see. That's what we see. And I think, so let's talk about COVID, because
yeah.
I kind of flipped that narrative a bit, where workers or employees were in the driver's seat, right? Through the pandemic, and we're not going to get into whether or not people think it was a plandemic, P-L-A-N or a pan, but let's just look at the results. And I remember there was an interview with Mark Cuban, owner of the Mavericks, Dallas Mavericks in U.S., you know, very... And he says, this pyramid, the work pyramid where the CEO is at the top, it's been flipped now. So now you see, to your point, that the influence and kind of the power structure is flowing from the bottom up. And even now, trying to get persons back in the traditional work office space, at first it was, I don't want to work from home. I want to go into the office. Now it's like, I don't want to go to the office. I want to work from home. I want to work remote. You know, I want to be in the Bahamas and still, as long as I produce. Right. So you see this model. But the something we talk about in leadership is something called morally adaptive leadership, Hubert. And this is something that the Harvard Kennedy School speaks of in regards to the shift in leadership dynamics, that leadership is not just having the answers, not just having solutions, but it's an ongoing learning, researching. It's adapting. You hear things such as emotional intelligence and empathy, also engagement, giving agency to, voice to those that you work with. And the concept of servant leadership, which, you know, we've heard from the likes of Dr. John Maxwell, you also being a trainer and coach, these things are now kind of coming together, like fitting the pieces in a puzzle, to say that real leadership is not just that you may know the answer, but that you're able to engage others and see different perspectives, and that you come to solutions together. You know, I think of answers and solutions as a little bit different. An answer is more definitive, but most of the things that we work with, right, and sometimes there's just a definite, like, you know, I put money in, I should be able to get that money out. That's a definite, right? But then there's other solutions when we get into government policy, community building, you know, where funds should go. These things have solutions, and sometimes they can change. I remember the hurricane that happened here, and we had partnered with, we became partnered with Bahamas in Atlanta, and we're shipping things in, and our city, you know, partnered. And there may have been plans for that particular administration to do certain things, right? But when that hurricane came, guess what?
Priority shift.
And that's a part of this kind of adaptive leadership model, that leaders recognize they're anticipatory, their perspectives, they're open to different perspectives. That's also part of diplomacy, right? When you sit down to the table or in negotiation, and we do negotiations as well, or mediation, you have to hear both sides.
Yes.
And then from there, you're able to walk through that path to see, where is this going? What are some viable solutions to that? But that's what happens. But sometimes people don't see that. We're like, we want it now, mm-hmm. right? And so part of that, again, is the leadership of being transparent, being open, sharing information with your constituents to say, yes, we had promised to do A, B, and C, but we just had a hurricane.
Yeah,
I'm just using this for example because it really goes into other things. So we can't do C right now, but let me show you why we can't do C. If we do C right now, then A and B won't. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Because sometimes we assume that people may not understand, but then we haven't given them information to make that choice.
Yeah.
And that's really where leadership is.
And I believe what you're saying is powerful, and this is something mm-hmm. I advocate all the time. I believe that the process, especially in national development, conversations are important. If you listen to the promo of this show, it says, we're helping to advance the national conversation. Mm-hmm. Too often, the narrative is conducted in a manner which is more, I am speaking to you, as opposed to we're speaking with each other. Now, the mode and the circumstance may not allow for a one-on-one or a significant feedback. But as you would have indicated, here are the options that we're faced with, these five. Because the circumstance of shift, we are now going to do A or B. If we do A, here's the outcome. If we do B, here's the outcome. In the circumstance, A appears to be the superior position. And we want you to understand why we are going down this path. Because not only are we going down this path, but we are entreating you to come with us. Because it's important that we do this as a collective and not you seeing me moving down that road. So in that vein and against that backdrop, Dr. Ripley, the characteristics which are necessary for a leader, what type of a leader readily embraces this type of a thinking that you have outlined just now?
I think we've sort of shared a little bit of that along the way.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be open, I think, to hearing others' inputs mm-hmm. and perspectives. I listen to conservative, I listen to, you know, liberal, and then the moderate. Because I think it's important, especially when you're working with government, to hear different views, to allow those views to be heard. But also, at some point, as a leader, you'll have to make the final decision, mm-hmm. right? So it comes down, so the onus comes back to your shoulders. But I think that the important part is really allowing people to be engaged in the process. And again, explaining to them, because we're rational beings. I mean, that's one thing. You know, we talk about, what's the most expensive property, right? We think Hong Kong, London, New York. No, it's actually intellectual property, which is our minds, our ability to think, to innovate, and to create. And so because humans are rational, again, sit down, allow for discussion about the opportunities. That's leadership. Being integrous. So if you give your word, you're going to do A and B, you need to do it. If something comes and hear people say, well, I would have done it, but this happened. Well, did you communicate back?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So even, you know, when I'm working on teams or groups, and it's really the same principle, if you're on the way to complete an assignment or you have something to do and something happens that not allows you to complete it or there's an impasse, communicate back. So we talk about communication, feedback, and follow through and follow up, right? Communication, feedback, follow up, follow through.
Mm-hmm.
And if we continue that process, I think at every level, we wouldn't have some of the issues that we have in disgruntlement. I mean, you can't please everybody. That's because if you choose one, you know, obviously the person who wanted the other would have said, well, I wanted this.
Yeah.
But I think we should communicate. So we can't do B because of this. We're short. But we will feed back to you when the money comes in mm-hmm. or when this, you know, port opens or when everybody can go outside, you know, with COVID. It was a whole lot of high people are like, what's the truth? And they're on, you know, social media. What is the truth? But, you know, again, we are not here to belittle government because government is important.
Extremely important.
It's very important. So this is not a government bashing mm-hmm. Of leadership, but it is just to make us all more aware, more cognizant of what it takes to really govern. And this even goes into households, mm-hmm. right? Community government, you know, neighborhoods and things like that. communicating, also, again, feeding back, but having the best interest of the individual in mind is what we strive to, and to create environments that, again, allow for you to flourish, to have education, to raise your family, to walk down the street and feel safe, to open business, to work for a company. You know, those are things that government helps. You turn on the lights, they come on. So I know, you know, with the hurricane, it was getting generators, getting energy back, infrastructure. These things take time. And again, there's phases to it. So it's communicating. First, we have to clear off. Mm-hmm. We have to relocate people. Then we have to clear off what's damaged. Then we have to come back in. We're going to need power. This is going to take a process. But if you keep communicating with people, I think the issue becomes when the leader gets quiet, Hubert, and you don't know what's going on, and you feel like you're left in the dark, and you're supposed to be leading me or what do.
Exactly.
That frustrates, yeah.
And it comes back to, I think you used the word earlier, that human beings are rational. It's important that we don't always be irrational. But it's important as a leader that is your starting point in terms of your thinking. You don't immediately think, well, all of these people are irrational, and consequently, they don't know what to do. They're not going to react, respond properly, and therefore, I am the rational or the most rational person in the group, yeah. And I'm going to go that way. So if you take the view that the individual has the ability to reason through this, if you take the view, one of the things you touched on earlier is a respect for the sovereignty of the individual, respect for the agency of the individual. If you do those things and then you bring them together with the view that all things being equal, when we put all the bits and pieces together, it's going to be in a position to better serve the collective or the broadest swath of the collective as is possible.
Right.
We're always going to be optimizing our effort, maximizing the use of the resource, and more importantly, building that ongoing partnership, which is going to help us to transform circumstances, aren't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Hubert, everywhere, all the places I've been privileged to travel, every person wants the same for their person and family, right? To have a place of belonging, to have a place of respect and feel dignity and opportunity. You know, if something belongs, even without language barrier, right? If I were to go into someone's store and take something without paying, in any language, they say, mine, you know, give it back, that's wrong. And so to that rational point, I think, too, we have to realize that, you know, we can reduce everyone to a human.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were in Africa and Dr. Monroe said that. So he was speaking and he was like, I reduce everyone. No disrespect to titles and, you know, potentates and all of that. But I understood the context of what he was saying. You know, and, you know, Maslow, you know, basic needs kind of assesses that everyone, you know, needs food and shelter and these things. So if we look at these are basic needs. Everybody wants this, right? The issues that we have as leaders is kind of working with the process of how to get to that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, even in that, we talk about emotional intelligence, talk about cultural intelligence. And I remember being in South Africa and was driving along and I saw these kind of newly built homes. They were government homes and they were near some squatter homes. So squatter homes are basically, you know, they make them. It's definitely a long culture and they, you know, live. But the government said, you know, it'd be great if we build these homes so, you know, they could have more walls instead of these tin roofs and they had rocks on, you know. And we're driving by and they were all empty. And I asked my host, I was like, what happened? He says, well, the government built these homes because they felt that's what the squatters needed. But what they did, many of them went and sold the wire, the copper wire, for money, and then went back to their homes.
No.
Their old, you know, traditional, generational homes. And in that moment is the salient thought to me of that leaders have to have emotional intelligence, but also cultural intelligence.
Yes.
Because you'd say, well, why would someone want to live in that way, when the government has provided, you know, government will say, well, we provided this opportunity. And so, again, you have these conversations. What is it that you want? And so for them to think that this is what they wanted because it maybe looked better in the community, but that's not. They went right back to what they were used to traditionally. And so you have to navigate that. I mean, leadership is not an easy by any means,
by
right?
Any stretch of imagination.
By any means. You know, you talk about also ethics. Right? I mean, we would say it's wrong to steal.
Mm-hmm.
But if a mom stole, you know, some fruit to feed her hungry, starving kids, what would we say? Is it still wrong to steal? Like, who makes those decisions? You know, so there's a lot that we weigh into when we talk about ethics and morality, but also understanding culture. You know, my first thought would be like, why can she not afford to feed her kids? Mm-hmm. And these are things that the world is wrestling with now, you know, post-COVID. Prices have gone very high. Atlanta has seen a lot of development, a lot of businesses coming in, but that's all, you know, that's great for the economy and business, you know, have this. But for the people who live there, who now have seen increases in rents, mortgages, utilities, you know, the interest rate, we just took that up mm-hmm. the other week. Again, you know, they're trying to squell some of this inflation. How do you make those decisions?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can answer that, but I'm just wanting the audience to know that these are hard decisions.
Yeah, they're huge trade-offs.
To make. Yeah. There's a lot of, trade-offs. Yeah. Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And there are so many significant critical issues that Absolutely. Come at you. And one of the things, as you mentioned earlier, leadership is important. Government is important. Governmental and national leadership is important. Oftentimes, we within the populace are not as kind to national leaders as we should be. We create significant expectations, and sometimes the expectations are wrongly placed. However, and this is not to diminish the statement I just made before, in some instances, the leaders themselves contribute to this unwarranted expectation because of failure to communicate and because they sell a narrative which goes beyond the resource capability at a moment in time. And when they do that, you use a word earlier, integrus. When they now realize, because we know how this thing goes, your country is going through an election, getting into election mode. There are going to be great promises.
Great promises.
Once you make those promises, we can forgive you because you're making them from the outside going in, especially if you are not the incumbent. But having now received the facts, oftentimes leaders do not reset that conversation. They allow persons to rest on the expectation was initially created, knowing very well that there's absolutely almost near to impossible way of delivering that. And so it goes back to this old idea of ethical leadership, being open and transparent, being accountable, not just saying, well, I gave you $100, tell me how you spent it, but being accountable and transparent with your words, with your representations, with the things that you do to advance and inspire, seeking to inspire and motivate the people you lead.
Absolutely. And as you talk about elections, right, lots of promises get made all the time.
Yes.
To garner votes. I remember being in one of the global leadership forums here in Nassau that Dr. Moreau was speaking to, and he says, you know, there's something that he would say, we need more leadership in politicians, not more politicians in leadership. And I think just kind of attesting to the fact that there is an expectation of leadership, but with expectation also comes accountability. Mm-hmm. And often we make these grandiose promises because we want votes. But real leaders, visionary leaders, so we go from the servant, you know, we talk about the servant leader, Hubert, and we go into something now that we hear more about, this is visionary leadership. That we look beyond the 4, 5, or 6 years that we may be in office or a party to the condition of our nation 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road. You know, speaking of the 50th celebration in this past weekend in Atlanta, Honorable Mitchell was there from mm-hmm. and he shared the story of the beginnings and the question that was asked. I believe he said to Sir Lyndon Pendling at the time, will Bahamas make it to 50 years? And with this assurity, he was like, yes, right? He saw this vision, the signatories, and I love to see the signs. They had some of the signs there mm-hmm. too at the event there that saw a vision beyond just the party. Yes, there's a process to it, but they saw a nation and they saw their children and their grandchildren. And so I think that goes into the next level. If we have to kind of tier leadership, visionary leaders, yes, they're servant leaders, but they've taken it to another dimension to where they're able to convey, this is what we see for the country moving forward. These are the areas that we'll need to address. It won't be easy. And I remember, and again, I'm not getting into which party, I'm going to track back to the U.S. One of the things I think that made President Barack Obama's campaign resonate so with persons who hadn't voted and even with the young persons, right? It was, we're in this together. This kind of, this mantra, this ethos of, we're in this together. We are the change. Yeah. That it's not me because I went to, you know, a fancy school or, you know, my grandfather, father, you know, like no legacy and anything. And I'm not saying that because we don't have a choice where we're born, right? We don't know if we're going to be born to someone of legacy to do whatever. But I'm just saying that, that you know, he told his story of, you know, how he came up and he was like, but this can be your story.
Yeah.
And he gave, you know, again, I'm not getting into where people may stand on either side of dreamers, first generation that came into the U.S., that we're in this together, the nation that we create, the community that we create, we'll do this together. So it wasn't just a one person, right? It wasn't one person making that. It's what we talked about earlier, that we're engaging and saying that you're integrally a part of what happens in this community, what happens in this nation, what policies drive it, what, you know, you're a part of this. So it's not just one person and not just one party. And unfortunately, we've seen this kind of polarity of parties now over the past few years, really around the world, but, you know, I'll speak more so in the U.S., where we used to be able to have these open kind of debates, you know, in a more genteel way of respect to disagree with being agreeable. But some of the rhetoric that we've seen come out has just been like, where's the decency? And so now you have people, and when to your point, you said earlier, when people see this, you know, it's on news all over the world, you know, someone finger in the president's face or they're saying certain things, people lose trust in government. And the thing about it is that government needs the people. I know it's the other way around, but it's kind of the, it's this reciprocous a relationship, right? Government needs the people, but the people need the government. So if the people are disillusioned with government, the government, where will they draw what they need to, you know, the intellectual capacity, you know, the social capital. We talk about social capital, these institutions of learning, workplace that are part of the community building, and the human capital as well. Where will they draw that from? So you know, we have to understand that it is a reciprocal relationship, that you need each other. So it's better to work together than to die as fools. I can't think of the quote right now, but what is it? You might know what it is. It's something like, it's better to work to live than to die as fools or something. I'll find it somewhere. Yeah. But, you know, so and I think, too, that lends to the fact of when there was an impasse, that we sit down to a table.
Yeah, because we're in this together.
We're in it together.
We're in this together. And, you know, just to go back before we take our break, to go back to Obama, you invoke Obama. The genius of Obama, I believe, was he asked the hard question. He laid out a vision which was clearly different from what existed at the time. He presented to America an America which person wanted. And he asked them, can we do it?
Yes,
and
we
can. And he didn't leave them to answer. He said to them, yes, we can.
Yes.
And he kept saying, yes, we can. Yes, we can. And the shift there then become, who are we? Who is the we he's talking about? Is he at the time, because he was a Democratic candidate, was he representing to the... Yeah, and he said to them, look, there's no blue America or a red America. We are just American. And so in his vision, in his entreating the public to support him, he laid out a path. He asked the hard question. He told them it can be done. And he defined who would do the doing. Yes, we can. And I believe that the essence of that needs to be drawn out, or can be drawn out, as an example. And if that is sprinkled around the world, regardless of what you may think of the administration subsequent and how things actually played out, I think if more of that can be injected from an inspirational point of view, many, many countries can benefit. We're going to take a break here. We're having a conversation with Dr. April Ripley, and we're talking. We're just having, you know, a fireside chat. This is how we speak when we get together. But we want you to understand that all of these issues, they are connected. And it doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter where you were born. If you're from Jamaica, like myself, if you're from Atlanta, Georgia, United States, or if, as April does on a regular basis, goes to many, many countries in Africa. It doesn't matter where you are from. At the end of the day, take all of the issues, take all of the crises, take all of the complications that we're faced with. And if we do one thing that she said, reduce it to the humanity.
Yeah.
And then work to enhance that humanity, great things are going to happen. Because if I respect the humanity in you and you respect the humanity in me, and we recognize that as individuals, we are only part and parcel of the same indivisible whole, great things happen. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Beulah gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
My mama once told me a story that her mother died at 15. She went on to go through high school, college, and become a teacher before the age of 20. She raised a son. She called him Brandon. You know him as Sosa the Man. And I dream in color. Yeah. My parents taught me to dream. How you gonna ever see reality if you don't dream? Follow your dreams to know where you headed. When you make a wish, don't ever forget it. Don't ever sell your soul for something you won't die for. More money, more problems. But I want more. I want to see the world make a better living.
As we listen to Sosa the Man expressing this idea of how you dream. When I dream in colors. The individual, the human being, is simply doing that, putting their dreams in colors. This is how they see their lives. This is how they see their world. The big issue is we all have different dreams. And we operate in a complex system, which necessarily require us to compromise, to create trade-off, to delay. And leadership has a role to play. So while leadership must, of necessity, help the individual to be able to marshal and hold on to that personal dream, it must also create the environment, the facilitation for that to happen. And so when we think within the context of the main reason you are here in the Bahamas, I won't lie to the people and say that you just come for the essentials. But you're here to talk about transforming nations. And how do we get to that place of transforming the nation other than through the unitary value that starts society?
It starts with people.
There you
right?
go.
It's all about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes leadership. It's a heavy, I don't even know if I want to borrow this particular, we used to say heavy is the head, the wears the crown.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, the United States was a colony initially, but I say that to say that it's heavy in leadership because you have the responsibility and accountability to the persons that you lead,
mm-hmm.
Also to yourself as an individual, to your family. Again, to your nation, but also to the world now, how you represent your nation to the world, the issues that you speak about. And at the break, we're having a little discussion right about the smaller states
mm-hmm.
and their representation. And I remember several years ago at the United Nations, there was a presentation done by a head of state at the time that talked about, you know, these smaller nations that each person in the United Nations General Assembly, each state has a vote. So whether you're, you know, 7 billion or 1 billion strong or you're 500,000 in population, you all get the same vote. But what was recognized was the fact that the consequences of yeah. being smaller, right, often leads to more dependency on the more dominant world powers.
Mm-hmm.
First world, third world, I know now they don't call it third world necessarily. They, you know, call it emerging and developing. But sometimes, you know, they're still treated, many of the time, treated in a certain way simply because of their raw resources. Because really that's what that narrative was about. These mm-hmm. these countries, Global South, Africa, have resources, raw resources, and they have enough people to get the raw resources out. But there wasn't any, you know, development of the people to go beyond just extracting the raw resources. And oftentimes, the persons who knew how to do that and how to refine it, right? So we talk about manufactured capital, which really comes from the raw capital. They didn't have access to finances for that capital, education not. And so, again, all these elements were left in the hands of the few.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to what we talked about earlier, now that there is more access to information about what has been withheld or undervalued,
mm-hmm.
I want it. You know, once I want that. That's what I'm saying. If I'm supplying what keeps your lights on and it's worth that much to you because now it's finished, it's manufactured, then why don't I get the benefit of that? Even when it's in the raw form.
Mm-hmm.
And I know recently, you know, with the COP27 and, you know, all these conferences, these ad hoc conferences and things like that to address certain global issues, one being climate. I know the PM of Barbados has been open, and I remember hearing an interview where she was asked, you know, oh, there's so much corruption and, you know, how do you expect to do anything? And she stopped the interviewer. And, you know, with straight face said, don't talk to me about corruption. It's corruption all over the world. but that still doesn't mean that things don't get done. Mm-hmm. And she started to outline, you know, what, especially while we're here in the Caribbean, how climate change has certainly affected countries, what COVID has done, the dependency, you know, for imports especially. But I do know that at this past CARICOM meeting that happened here in Bahamas in February, the 25 by 2025 agenda that was laid out by the president of Guyana to lessen the dependency of food imports in the Caribbean, Guyana, Jamaica, and Haiti are the three countries that actually supply about 60% of their food, as research shows. And this was at a 2019 report on the Food Agriculture Organization of the UN. So, you know, but a part of that, going back to critical thinking, yes, you know, not just always tourism, not just insurance, not just havens, financial havens, but we have to feed people. And so part of that process, and I know the Caribbean Development Bank and other agencies are working together critically to think, well, we need resources, finances in order to build infrastructure, to store, to, you know, again, manufacture and be able to export and logistically get to other islands in the Caribbean. And I think that those are the kind of conversations that I'm glad to hear are being had between the nations in the Caribbean, but also to the people, that it should trickle down, that we're working on it. And here's some, you know, changes and things that are coming because we understand the need for that. And I believe that there is now a push collectively in regions in the Caribbean, the CARICOM African Alliance that happened around 2019, 2020, to connect diaspora, but also resources. A lot of resources have been discovered in the Caribbean. I was invited to an event with Guyana that was sponsored by a very notable oil and gas corporation that has discovered oil and gas. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes the outside sees certain values and things that we know it's there, Hubert, but I think going back to what I just shared, that we don't always know how to extract it and to finish it, refine it is the word I'm looking for, refine it to manufacture it for our benefit. And it reminds me of a story that Dr. Monroe told. He was at a conference, it was a business luncheon, and he was talking about the South, the southern part of the U.S., where I'm from, and that, you know, my ancestors, excuse me, picked cotton, but it was taken away and finished, refined, and made into textiles, and then sold back to me, but I didn't get the benefit of the stages of that. And that's also something that Africa is working with as well.
Yes.
And so I find that these two areas, you know, Africa and the Caribbean, to be in a place of now saying, look, we now have the intellectual capacity. Not we didn't, but people have studied, again, more information. We've learned some things where we saw dearth in mining, dearth in understanding, you know, certain policies and how to build housing and what type of housing and how to, you know, environmentally protect ourselves. There's more information. So it's been beneficial because it's really put a demand. And I think that's also something towards leadership, right? That the great leaders that we, you know, herald often came in the most trying and would-be defeatist of times. Beatings, lynchings, you know, India Gandhi, who influenced Dr. King, you know, Mandela, I'm going to prison, you know, came at these very hard times in human history. But it's almost like this, I don't know, this divine, or I should say providential, like, did that have to happen for them to come out, right? Did there have to be Goliath for David then to rise to the potential of his leadership to be there? And that's maybe a question I'm going to pose back towards you or in this conversation, right? That there had to be, these situations that come that bring out the leader that could be dormant and doesn't recognize it, that they are the Moses, or they are the Marleys.
And, you know, if to go to your scenario, I believe a Goliath defined David. But David was first defined by his decision to face up to a Goliath. And so it's almost...
And that started... So he had the lion and the bear, right?
Yes.
So he tested it out. So he tried it in the smaller things, mm-hmm. which is sheep.
Yeah.
And then there came the big one.
Yeah. But, you know, bravery.
Yeah.
I got to be careful with that because the Prime Minister of the Bahamas is also known as brave.
Oh.
but bravery is learned. Mm. And it's practice. So in is... preparation, if you will, of slaying a lion and slaying a bear, he looked up at Goliath and said, well, he slay able. Maybe harder.
Right.
But he slay able. Mm. What do I need? I need to be focused. I need to be brave. I need to be bold. And I need to step out and face him. Right. Now, he could have done that with any other individual on the battlefield, and we would never be talking about him today, would we?
No.
Because he slayed an ordinary person. So the extent of the problem, the largeness, the significance, the complexity of the crisis then defines his performance in the moment. And this is one of the reasons why I believe the arguments being marshaled by Honorable Mia Mottley, the arguments which have been proffered by the Honorable Prime Minister of the Bahamas as it relates to the impact of global warming and the impact of climate change on the Bahamas,
yes.
The impact that the actions of large countries are having on small states like the Bahamas and the rest of the Caribbean are important,
yes.
Because they are taking on what I believe to be gargantuan issues which were tried before by individuals in the UN. The conversations have been happening over and repeatedly. The question, though, here is a moment in time when we are experiencing, you know, temperatures of 105, 110 in the Caribbean, 115. We're not used to these things. And so these are further defining their conversation. And so out of that, a new type of leadership is emerging from small island states, from African states, which have not seen before and which have the potential to change the balance, the global balance, if you will, from not only from the perspective of the initial discussion, which is about climate change and so on and so forth, but financially, economically, from the perspective of how do we now marshal our own resource? How do we have a conversation with you? How do we engage? So the rules of engagement are being tensioned with a view of creating a better circumstances for all persons involved. And I believe that out of this could emerge a David and Goliath situation. I would hope so. I really believe that, you know, just taking the two leaders as an example, there are others, but the two Caribbean leaders who have invested a significant amount of political capital as part and parcel of the leadership to start to talk about these things, not just for the individual country, and this is where this is the leadership aspect comes in. They're not just speaking for the Bahamas or speaking for Barbados. They're speaking for all small island states. And when you take Honorable Mia Mottley's conversation to the nth power, she's also speaking for Africa and the African diaspora.
Absolutely. To your point, there's a power in the collective.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, we've seen collective organizations, I mean, even the founding, the origins of CARICOM, right? Mm-hmm. Recognize that, this not to sound cliche-ish, but no man is an island.
No.
But we can get them together,
mm-hmm.
in a collective of resources, of capital, finance, but also intellectual, and the resources together to ensure that this region and other regions do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The EU does it, the ASEAN region, Latin America, a lot of the bilateral and agreements and things like that. But yes, I think what that brings to a part of leadership is to bring again the commonality, right? That we're here, we want to protect our families, our homes, and what the actions of one, going back to that quote I started off with Dr. King, it affects others. And it's affecting here, and it's certainly in this region. You know, you already had plans, like you said, we have plans to do A, B, and C, but now because of what's happened, climate change, some of the funds and, you know, priorities have shifted because now we're talking about needing to have more energy because temperatures are rising, right? The demand for what we had planned to do has now shifted to need more resources. And so that strain can be devastating, especially on smaller countries. To the effect of Africa and what's happening, and we see these long-standing political parties that are now being challenged because the people have not seen benefits that had been promised, you know, for campaign, and you know, some are saying they're dancing, and you know, to the tunes of those powers that be, and not as concerned with their nations. It's going to be a major shift. I mean, you know, even national ideologies that we talked about a little bit off microphone, you know, in the art of war, we can come together and create alliances if we have a common enemy. So this gets not into just, you know, this black and white of, you know, should I align myself with this country or this nation because they're opposed to another country or nation? Leaders now have to say what is going to be in the best interest of my country. Mm-hmm. And even then, Hubert, even then, you know, we say you watch your back. It's like you have to watch times two. Mm-hmm. Because to your point, right, you follow the money. That's really what colonization was about, right? Finding a resource that would make the economy, you know, that nation rich. Rich in territory, rich in raw resource that could come back to, you know, the home country. But it was about wealth generation. And so you still have to be even in these alliances, and that goes into diplomacy, right? How do you navigate through when you may have a little bit less than the other, than the larger state and resources? It's a very ginger dance that you have to do.
Yeah. And the question is always going to be, how do you come to the table as equals? How do you come to the table to have a conversation from a position of strength, not simply looking at global might, financial might,
right,
size versus their size versus your size, but having an understanding that we are in a big conversation together. Mm-hmm. We are in a major experiment of living on a planet and living on it in a way which requires us to be good stewards of the planet. And consequently, even if I am smaller than you, even if my output is less than yours, I can topple, I can disrupt, I can cause things to happen such that you need to pay attention to me. And, you know, it is said, therefore, when we look at those things and look at the complexity, it is said that the new illiterates are those individuals who are unable to unlearn and relearn. The persons who are going to change the world, the persons who are going to move forward, the persons who are going to be most effective in leadership must be those who have the ability, the willingness, and the humility to recognize that the things that we knew up to now, we have to kind of unlearn them and relearn some new things for the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You talk about futurist Alvin Toffler, who said that. And also to that point, the, you know, paradigm shifts, pivots, and sometimes just models that are obsolete. Because the world that we're living in today is a different world than 3 years ago, even 6 months ago. Conversations, I mean, just in this past week alone, I think the reports were talking about the Russian-African, you know, there's about 40-something nations represented, 17 heads of state there, and, you know, how can Africa get wheat, debt forgiveness, all these, you know, different things that people are recognizing, nations are recognizing that you can't do business as usual. And the old models are obsolete.
The old models don't work.
You know, they don't work. You know, it's they call it a classic car, right? Mm. It's great, but you can't put anything from the classic car into the new models. Mm. And of course, now with, you know, electric cars, which going to that is this, because you have this thing of, well, people are migrating to my country, right? They're coming into country. Well, you know, it reminds me of something that Bishop Desmond Tutu said. He's like, okay, well, you can rescue me from the water. I'm kind of summarizing it. Mm-hmm. Well, how about going upstream and find out why I'm falling in?
Yes.
So you can make policies about migration, but if you don't go to the root of it, you know, think of a doctor. So let's come all the way down. You say, I have a pain in my jaw, mm-hmm. right? And the doctor says, what is he swollen? He's got to get to the root in that tooth, mm-hmm. right? He's got to get down there to find out what is causing. You might say, well, you know, this caused it from here and here and there. So going back to find out what's causing the migration. So it's usually going to be something in policy or government. Most migrants move for opportunity, mm-hmm. opportunity to work. So, you know, these narratives too that say, well, you know, they're lazy and they don't want to do anything. I mean, people who are trekking through dangerous forests, you know, some of the things that happened to the women and children along the way to cross a river, to try to get into it. And again, I'm not getting political here. I just want you to hear the humanity. If someone by foot traverses that, they're leaving for a reason. Mm-hmm. That's one scenario. Then you have the other, where you're disrupting the earth because of the need for the new and the latest, right, addition of the metals and minerals that are coming. So you disrupt the land. The land then is more susceptible to breeding diseases and different things. So those people say, well, I got to leave here. I can't stay here. But then you don't want to give them access, the people access to your country. But you want the resource that the people can provide from that country. Mm-hmm. So we have, again, you know, when you say sitting at the table, how do you get the power, the bigger to sit with the smaller? That shifts the mindset, Hubert, because first I have to see you as an equal in dignity, in humanity, in respect. Mm-hmm. Not because your land mass is smaller, so you probably have less people. That is always the tension. Always the tension. And I don't know. I think about that too, just, you know, from a scriptural basis. You know, Jesus had disciples and they were like, you know, mom came and said, who gets to sit on your left and right? He's like, wait, hold on. This is not about who gets the power play. It's about a mission. It's about a purpose that's greater than whether you're in the boardroom or you're at the C-suite or you're, you know, the person who's out at the mine. It's about it all together. It's not one or the other. It's and. It's the collective of working together and bringing, again, I think, dignity to work, to individuals. And I think that's something that we lost. And obviously, you know, our history, even our Constitution, there was no dignity to the person. We're property, right? Mm-hmm. Historically property. I mean, how can you be a percentage of a person? Okay, I can't even get into that because my mind just, but this is acceptable. Or apartheid in Athens, I mean, in Africa, right? How does the color of my skin or my socioeconomic status make me less human than you? Those are things that are belief systems that have been taught and ingrained through many sources over time that we're still working through. And although we have laws that can help to protect where I can go through the front door, where my great-grandmother couldn't go in certain places and things because, that still does not mean that that person will think of me as an equal to them in a humane perspective. So that's when we get to the heart, Hubert. And so leadership also is not just the head,
yes,
but it's also the heart. And so I think when you have the heart of leadership too, and that's where the servant leadership comes in. We have the visionary, you have the servant leader, but it's the heart to love people, of all people. And it makes me think of something Dr. Monroe said again in our travels. He's like, when I walk into a place, I speak to everyone. I would see him. You know, we come to the airport, and there's a person that's, you know, tidying up, and he'd say, "How are you doing?" And he'd have a conversation. the host would be there. You know, he's going to government, you know, we did a press conference, I remember, and they were there, you know, all the escorts and everything. But he would take a moment to speak to the person who was working at the airport, handling luggage, with the same respect that he would give the host that was picking him up. Mm-hmm. And I learned from that in observation, but also because he shared it, because there is dignity in every person. My parents tell me this, that every person is a unique expression of God in the earth. And there is something in you that he felt the world should not do without. And so, of course, our job, too, another aspect, and that could be another conversation as leaders, is how do we help to draw out that? How do we help you first to discover it, mm-hmm. to recognize it, and then help you to release it? And that's part of creating this environment of different things. So long conversation, but that's yes. that's what I think.
it's very important. And, you know, persons listening may see this as, you know, we deliberately haven't gotten deep into some of these issues because obviously, you know, they are, some of them are kind of, you know, persons get pulled to one side or the next. And we want to take the middle of the road. But the issue is, at the essence, is we want to come back to the place where we all understand that leadership. If you find yourself in a leadership position, and most of us do at some point in time, but especially for those who are consistently there and those who hold very important position, especially at the national level or large institutions or within the community, you need to come to the place where you understand, you accept, and you appreciate that a huge part of leadership is about advancing the humanity of the individual. And like you say, helping that individual to first understand and accept that humanity, their uniqueness, and then working in a facilitative way of enlarging that. And we do this simply. I do this in my walks by reminding persons of the essence of Ubuntu. I am because we are.
Yes.
Recognizing that the collective holds a responsibility to the individual, and the individual has an obligation to the collective. Because we are never, ever greater than the least of us. Never. And when we recognize that, and when leadership emerges, and this is where Ubuntu brings your servant leader and your visionary leader and your transformative leader together. Because on one hand, we're here to serve. On the other hand, we're here to pave and show a path to the future.
Yes.
And then next, we are going to work in such a way where we transform the future well beyond our reach, which comes back to the proverb you gave. There are some trees that we need to plant in whose shade we will not sit. That yes. is the essence of leader, because we recognize that we are now sitting in the shade of some trees that we didn't plant.
That's right.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear how Dr. Ripley ensures that she is a continuous learner and how she sees the essence of Ubuntu. She's been to Africa many, many times. That's where it's from. I want to hear from her. You listen to The Essential Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Grab your camera, capture the spirit of the Bahamas, and win cash and prizes. Scotiabank, in partnership with the Guardian Media Group, invites all youth, amateur, and professional photographers to enter the Celebrate Bahamas 50 Photography Competition, being held under the theme One Nation, One Legacy, Our Future. With more than $8,000 in cash to be won, snap those photos and send them in by August 30th. Visit guardiantalkradio.com or bs.scotiabank.com to find out how to enter. Let's celebrate our proud nation in photos. Terms and conditions apply.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bog down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson Pen. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody calling me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I wait?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then if you get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9. FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Conversation has been a long time coming. It's been a long time coming for us to have this sit down and talk about leadership. But as we look into the future, and we want to use you as an example or at least a starting point, how does leadership make its way forward, remain relevant, embrace this idea of continuous learning? But before you touch on that, I just, you know, need to get your feedback, because you have seen, you have touched the soil, you have touched the people. I want to get your feedback on this concept of Ubuntu as a central point for leadership or focus for leadership.
It goes back to something I said a bit earlier when I said the government needs the people and the people need government. And when you look at the world, the different systems, right? So you have the reproductive system, the ecological system. We need each other. And if we can recognize that we need each other, that each other is essential, mm-hmm. It's like the show, that I am because you are. So when I harm, and it makes me think of something that also is in scripture, right? It says, no man would hate his flesh and say, well, I love my flesh, but you do things to harm it. That doesn't make sense. So if I love you and I respect you as an individual, as a person, why would I want to do something to harm you? Mm-hmm. Because love seeks to give. Sometimes at the expense of self, because love gives. Where lust, on the other hand, seeks to take to benefit itself, because that's what lust does. It takes from. And so my love for humanity, I'm trying to find ways to give. You know, even in my work, I know some people follow me on social media. Some things I'm able to post, some I'm not. But it's always done in love for the people. I want to see the people have agency. I want to see them have opportunity. And if I'm able to connect organizations and individuals, entities, whatever it is, to fill a need, I think of God, that he made us to fill a need for creation, for this time, that we're here. And so Ubuntu really recognizes this village. It takes a village. It takes all of us. And if anything were to happen to that village, it disrupts equilibrium within the village. Naturally, when our equilibrium is disturbed, we always seek to find the balance. But here's the thing. If we cannot disturb it, we won't have to go through the changes to try to rebalance. But unfortunately, because of some of the normative frames of some persons, they've taken so much that now people have begun to realize that I was taken advantage of. And I don't know, I think of at some time of our life, all of us have felt, have been had or taken. And how does that feel? Angry?
Resentful?
Resentful. And sometimes, you know, this, I want to get back. Mm-hmm. Malcolm X said that violence is the language of the unheard. That, and I think of even the child, like when they're mad, they don't know how to say, you took this. They just, and they start screaming. So we have to delve deeper into some of the violence that we see. Because again, humans are intelligent. And when they sense that they're being taken advantage of in some way or dehumanized in some way, they will act out. Because often that's their only recourse to get your attention.
Yes.
Right?
Especially when they're unempowered.
When they're unempowered. That, you know, I've been in Africa where I saw tires burning. I know people see this on the news. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I was on my way and we had, and so we're going down, there's police because they burned tires and they were trying to say that there was something that a leader had promised in this community. It was not yet realized. And I wondered, had that leader communicated? We talked about that, created a forum, anywhere, whether it's in the school or something, to talk about this is what the issue is. And what often happens is not every leader is dishonest. You know, they all, you know, say, well, they're bribing and the money's not getting to where it is. And that could be the case. I'm not here to say it is or it is not. What I am saying is that if you allow things for people to just think what they want to think sometimes as leaders, this is why it's important to communicate. Because if someone gets a narrative and say, oh, well, the money didn't get here, they didn't do this. And I tell, you know, research shows that you'll tell, you know, seven other people that you mm-hmm. disgruntled with. Just sit down and say, this is where the money was supposed to go, it did or it didn't, and this is why not.
Right.
Then to let it roll on, right? That's where the problem goes. Because leaders think, well, if I come out, what'll happen? It's better to own up to a mistake or to be open about it.
Be transparent.
Be transparent about it and be accountable.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, we're running out of time, so we need to go back to the last point there on this idea of continuous learning for leaders.
Absolutely.
And so as you do that as a means of wrapping up, how do you keep yourself relevant and what would you entreat persons who aspire to be leaders, who are leaders, to do?
African proverb, Hubert, learning expands great souls. For me, it's learning from individuals like yourself. We're having this conversation, but I've learned from you. I read. I listen. My car is a mobile university. Access to all kinds of podcasts, from leadership books to some history books, even stories about people's lives from Sidney Poitier, like I said, others, Cicely Tyson, to hear their life stories. I listen to a lot of different things to be kind of this well-rounded individual, I think, of understanding. And I think that also creates empathy. The TEDx's, everyone knows about the TEDx's, but they're other, the Maxwell's, entrepreneur leadership, books like Covey and Malcolm Gladwell that stretches your thinking, Jim Collins, Good to Great. Simon Sinek talks about the why. You know, I think about purpose when I think about Dr. Monroe, so I kind of tie that in. He's kind of modern or taken that word that we use a lot of purposes to the why we do things. So there are a lot of avenues, even organizations that are about leadership, you know, around people that also are learning. I think that's important too. I love that analogy on Jim Collins' book, From Good to Great. He talks about who's on our bus, the law of association with Maxwell, right? That you become like the persons who are in your smaller circle. So I think it has to be intentional. Hubert, so I've intentionally stretched myself beyond my comfort zone, to learn, to hear, again, opinions or perspectives, I would say, that are different from mine. And to then, you know, say, let's look at this from a fresh take and see, you know, what do I think? Is it valid or more discussion?
Powerful.
Yeah.
Final words, 30 seconds.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. And I know we talked a lot about different things in leadership, but I want to encourage everyone to know that you were created unique, to stand out, to be exceptional by design, by your life, and to get around persons and be willing to stretch yourself beyond your comfort zone, stretch beyond it in learning, to release the greatness that's in you and the potential. Because the world, we're waiting on you. And there's other people who are waiting on you to do what you need to do. So do it. Just do it even in the face of fear, like Nelson Mandela. Because courage is not the absence of it, but it's just being able to say, I'm going to do it.
In spite of it. Thank you so very much, Dr. April Ripley. It's been a wonderful conversation. And again, when you come back, you certainly know we have to do this. And I want to leave with our listeners Ubuntu leadership as a point for a new look at leadership. Not anything different, but a balancing, maybe a balancing aspect in the way we have done it up to now. Because the way we have done it up to today is largely centered on individualism. And so Ubuntu leadership has some underlying underpinnings which speaks to interdependency, respect, integrity, kindness, and love. And we recognize that I am because we are. And as Dr. April Ripley said, if you love yourself, you certainly won't hurt yourself. If we are all part and parcel of the same individual entity, then we will work together to maximize us. All that is left to say is, as we usually end the show, do not ever allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials. My guest was Dr. April Ripley. And as we always say, walk good, one love, take care, Ubuntu, and good night.
Experience from dependence to independence.